Okay, we're gonna go ahead and get started. So I'm Jeff Furman. I'm a program manager on the Blend team, primarily responsible on the XAML side for both the XAML Designer in Visual Studio as well as the Blend product. So the talk today is on LOB apps. And starting off, LOB apps, whenever I spoke about this on the team and with other people, there are a lot of terms that come to mind. And people think about what defines what an LOB or line of business app is. And does it need to have, a database component? Does it need to have heavy control density or data visualization? What are sort of the different terms that come to mind? And when I define a line of business app, I really focus on four different points. And for me, a line of business app is simply a data-driven, domain-specific application that's built on top of existing patterns and frameworks for the enterprise. So what I mean by that is it's pretty straightforward that you are consuming data for the user. It's focused on one particular scenario that you're really looking at in this application. And you use existing patterns and frameworks because it enables you to test it better, to be able to rapidly deploy applications, to not reinvent the wheel every time. And for the enterprise, mainly in how you deploy the application. And if you have questions there, I'm not going to cover that as much as Robert Green covered it in a couple talks yesterday and the day before. So the main thing, though, apart from that, is that as we move forward with line of business applications, in the past, all computing was primarily done on the desktop, and line of business applications were developed for that platform, or for that device, rather. With Windows 8, that's sort of reimagined, and computing is moving away from just a single console to other form factors, to slates, to tablets, I mean, even to phones. And we need to take that into consideration because people are going to expect to be able to consume and run these applications, not just sitting down at a desktop. So as we go on, there's one main thing that involves that traditionally has not been at the forefront of LOB applications, and that's really great UX. And the user experience is really important as you move to different device sizes because it's a different interaction pattern. And simply porting an existing app from the desktop and trying to make it run on a tablet is not going to work. So what we really focused on in this release was having LOB developers be able to achieve great UX without requiring a designer. Of course, if you have a designer, that's great, but off the bat, we still want to provide you with this moving forward so you can build your app as you would on a desktop. So, oops, here we go. So there are five different design principles that people talk about when you look at the Metro design philosophy. And this is really the core philosophy for the UX experience that we want to promote on Windows 8. And there's a wonderful talk that Jensen Harris did at Build this past year. I recommend that you check it out, and it'll walk through these 5 points pretty well. The one that I want to focus on here is the last one, when is one? And this point is important because this really deals with the tooling and what we're going to talk about today. And the idea of when is one is really that you can create a consistent experience across all the apps on your device so that at the end user who's using it feels immersed in it as opposed to each individual app having a different commanding pattern, having a different interaction that they have to learn up front. So a lot of that is tailored to, we have two basically products to help you with that, Blend and Visual Studio, and they really work hand in hand. Blend is now shipped in the box with Visual Studio. So with any install that has the Windows 8 tooling, you'll also have Blend installed with that. And while Visual Studio is really optimized around that core experience around developing and writing code, debugging, optimizing it, Blend is optimized for visual design tasks. And when I say optimize, that's really the focus. However, of course, there is some overlap, so you have more of a seamless experience going between the two, and it's not quite so segmented. Now, once you open either product and you start to build a Metro application, we realize the starting place really needs to get you going to build the UX that's appropriate. So backing up a little bit to WPF and even WinForms, when you created a new project, just file a new project, we gave you this, a blank window. And you were left up to your own to come up with a design, to populate it, and either successfully create a good user experience, or you're left open to your own demise. So when we moved on to Silverlight, we changed it a little bit. We realized that navigation was really important, and having a consistent experience across navigation was important, not just buttons all over the place. So our template started off with, again, a blank window, but some navigation at the top. But, you know, home, about, and it built in so that you could add pages to that. So this changed a little bit more when we got to Windows Phone, and we promoted UX even more, and the Windows Phone UX team put out a 50-page document or so that detailed how many pixels should be on each side of items in a list, and very in-depth UX, which I'm sure everyone read before they started building their application. But just in case they didn't, we started off with a little bit richer template that already had the right number of pixels between each list item, the right fonts, so that you could just start there, put your own data in, and then move from that point forward. And this was good, except it still only gave you one page. It was either a pivot or a panorama, data bound, and then you would have to go and add all your other pages and sort of follow the UX guidelines. And we tried to help by putting out a template on CodePlex that had some of these pages pre-built for you, but even that was a little hard to get to from the beginning, meaning you're much more likely to just start building your app, and once it's running, ship it. So for Windows 8, we developed both the grid and the split templates, which were really focused on the core of your application. So now you have not just the UX or the pixel perfectness between all of the controls, but you also have an interaction pattern that we built. So each of those has two or three pages, has sample data flowing through it, and allows you to start with something, understand it, and then build on top of that. And every page is just item templates. So you can continue to add these pages at will as you move and build your application. So with that, the templates had two main things in mind that we focused on. The first was, of course, that rich UX. We followed all the Metro guidelines. And if you go to design.windows.com, you can find pages and pages explaining pretty much every aspect of the UX and what and how Metro fits into your application or what sort of paradigms you'll want to pick up. And we made sure that our templates do align perfectly. And this is important, especially because your devices that you're building for, they have certain inherent features of Windows, such as scaling. So if people need to have poor eyesight, they can override scaling and make everything bigger. That means that everything gets scaled. So our templates are designed with the right number of pixels so that when they scale up, you don't end up with half pixels and things that non-crisp edges. In addition, it needs to be rich in features so that it supports everything natively in Windows. And one of the most important things are the view orientations. The user can take, if they have a slate, and flip it from landscape to portrait, and your app should work, or at least not crash. You should design for that to happen. In addition, if they wanted to launch another application, they can snap it or fill it, and that needs to be supported as well. Users will come to expect that. And on top of that, there are other areas, such as theming. If the user decides to go into high contrast, your app should work as well. And the templates take all of that into consideration and will work right out of the box. So with that, I'm going to go just right into a demo. It's the best way to illustrate where the templates are. So I'm going to start with just a blank project, and we're going to just build up from there and actually build an LLB application. So I have Visual Studio open, and the first thing I'm going to do is just create a project. One question before we get going, how many people here have done XAML development for like Windows Phone, WPF, or Silverlight? Okay, great. How many people have used the navigation framework that's built in for Silverlight and Windows Phone? Okay, all right. So I'm going to start, and I'm just going to create a grid app. And the application I'm going to build today is one that I've started actually in WPF and migrated. So for me, I love being outdoors, and I'm a member of Search and Rescue. And being on Search and Rescue, we get pages, and as soon as a page comes out, I need to run out the door and go help, which means I need to have all my right gear in place so I don't run out and realize I forgot my stove or all my first aid kit, something important, and end up being the one that needs to be rescued. So I built an application that will basically show me what items I need to pack for any given mission. And then what we're going to build now is sort of the management side of that. How do you add items and edit items so that I can update trips? If a new trip comes out, such as a multi-day mountaineering trip that needs different gear, I can add that. So that's the app that we'll build. And I'm going to call it PackSAR for Search and Rescue. So we'll go ahead and create it. And I'm going to use the grid template. So right off the bat, we're going to get an application, and I'll run it with some sample data. So when I hit run, and we've seen this in a couple other sessions, I have these groups, and each group has some items in it. Now I can scroll through the list, I can select an item, and it goes to this item page, has all the details. If you're on touch, you could just swipe through to get to the next pages. If you're using a mouse, you can click, go through the items. I can go back, and there's one other page. If I tap the header, I go to a group detail page. It has some details, and then I can click on items still. So now the first thing I'm going to want to do is hook up my data so I can just start designing the application. And I've decided to use SQLite for this. And I've packaged it in an extension SDK, but you can just go get it however you want. So I'm just going to go add a reference, and I'm going to go to Windows, and there's this extension SDK, which is SQLite, and I see that it depends on the Visual C++ libraries, so let's add that as well, and hit OK. And the first thing is I get these little warnings. So if I take a look, let's view the error list. I can see that it's telling me that any CPU is not supported because now I took a dependency on the C++ runtime. So I'll just change to run only on x86, and those go away. So great. Of course, I could specify multiple build configurations, one for ARM, one for 64-bit, and one for x86. It's just any configuration is not supported by C++. So now that that's added, I'm going to go ahead and add my data model. And since I had this from a previous app, this is the one component that I'm just going to bring in. So go to data model, and let's just grab it. Oops. And add it to the data model folder. Great. And so my model is relatively simple. I'm using, again, I have the SQLite interface, and I have a trip database that wraps that. And then I have just two models. I have this item model, and I'll just open the fields to show you what it is. It has a unique ID that represents it in the database, a title, a description, and then an image that goes with it. And then I also have a trip, and trips are made up of items. So in the trip, I'll open up fields again. Again, this has a unique ID, a title, some description, an image to go with it, and then a list of items. I've also chosen to include a list of top items in this implementation just because when you're on like that grid landing page, I don't want to show all 50 items. I only want to show 12 or so. So this is just a view that wraps items. I could have implemented other ways, but I chose to go with this. So those are my two models. Okay, now let's go to the first page and hook up the data. So the first page in my application is this grouped items page. And I'll open it up, and when the designer loads, the designer's new in Visual Studio 2012, and let me build first. And there we go. And we took the Blend and the CIDR code base and merged them together so that both Blend and Visual Studio are using the same renderer and the same parser. So what that means is, in addition to everything being able to render in both products, you also have some richer features, such as the document outline that came over from Blend and the property inspector as well. So the first thing that I'm going to do is I need to go and actually hook it up that when I navigate to a page, my data comes through. So I'm going to go to View, and I will just show the task list. One thing that we've done is we've added to-dos when you create your application that just tell you the lines that you need to change. So I'm going to go into this grouped items page. I'll just double-click. And I have this to-do in load state. So let's back up for a second and talk about load state. Every page that we have as item templates have a load state override as well as a save state. And one of the features that was really important in Windows 8 is handling what we call PLM, or process lifecycle management. And that's pretty similar to tombstoning on Windows Phone. In other words, you can have your application running, and at some point, if you run into too many memory pressures or you're opening too many apps, Windows may suspend your application in the background. It may even terminate it, and then when you go back to it, you need to resuscitate it and bring back all the data that you had up. So we want to make sure that when your app gets terminated, any data that you had, just transient data, UI data like the selected item on the screen, gets saved off into local storage, so when your app comes back, you're also at the same place. You may also want to do this with cloud storage so that if you move to another device, the same selected item when you open the app would be there in another, on another device. So what we've done is load state is being called from layout-aware page. So we created a base class that we use for all of our pages called layout-aware page. And I'll go to it. And this is found in this common directory. So it's part of every template, meaning you are free to customize it however you'd like. But it has a few things that are really important. It has layout awareness, meaning we've implemented go to state if you use Visual State Manager, so that this layout aware page, whenever the orientation changes, we'll just fire off a go to state event. We'll call Visual State Manager dot go to state and give it that state name. So you just have to define it in your page, and you don't have to write any code to handle different orientation changes. In addition, it has a default view model that you can use. That's in here. It's a dictionary of just a string to object, so it's not strongly typed, but it provides you a place to put data for any particular view, and we'll use that for now. And then the third thing that it provides is this, it handles this process lifecycle management. So when you call onNavigate2 to a page right here, what we do is we store a bunch of state about your given page. And we store all this so that if you ever want to navigate back or forward or need to save this, that state is stored. And then at the end, we call load state, and we pass in whatever your navigation parameter was back to you so that you can do something with it. So now we can go back to load state, and I see that I have some sample data groups. It's loading from sample data source, and it loads the data. This is what I need to get rid of. So I'm just going to, I'll leave that for now, and I'm going to use my trip model, which I have. And I have on it just get trips, which will go and fetch all of my trips. And that's all I need to do. And I'm going to store this in the default view model. And right now, groups is fine. I don't need to change that. All that's saying is that's the name that I'm using in the view model that's going to be bound to the view. So wherever I reference in the view any data bindings, it's bound against groups. Of course, I could change it, but I'll leave that for now. And I'll change one other thing while I'm here. When you click on a header, I want to go to the group detail page. So you can see that when you click on it, I get the group or that trip that you hit, which was the title, and then I navigate to the group detail page, and I pass in the unique ID. Now, this is really important that I'm passing in the unique ID and not the object, because when I'm navigating from page to page and I'm storing all this information, if you're putting complex objects in there, that stack is going to grow very large very quickly, and you really don't want to store or need to store all of this information. For my application that has some sort of, you know, basically static database, I only need to pass an ID, and then I can refetch that every time I load the page. If you need to store additional state, you could, but you should store it as session state for that particular page or for that session at large, like for the frame, rather than passing it as navigation parameters. So here, I know that this is really a trip, and it has a unique ID, so that's all I need to change. And then I can go to the view, and, well, actually, we can just run this first. We'll do that. Let it load, and you can see already I've picked up my data. So I have a single day search, and it has some items here, mountaineering rescue with some items. But I'm not, the image isn't showing up, I see. And when I click here, oops, I also notice that on the group detail page, I haven't wired that up. So let's go, and we can fix up the group detail page next. So first we had the group items page. So when we navigate away from the group items page, we navigate to the group detail page. It has details about that particular group. So I have another to-do. So we'll implement this one as well. So we're going to change this. I need to now I don't have group. I need to get the trip. So I'll get a trip. And the unique ID is what's being passed in as the navigation parameter. And then I can set it, just bind it. And the items, I have an items property, so you can see, on a trip. There we go. So that works. So one other thing that would be really nice to do is see all this data at design time so I can make changes. So if I go back to the grouped items page, which is sort of my landing page, you can see that despite hooking up the data and the code behind, I still have this old sample data showing through, which is not what I want. So the way that we had handled this originally is we bound up your data and code behind, but then we also supplied a design time binding so that you could have design time data, because we don't actually run the page that you're seeing. So we're not going to run that code behind. So if I just scroll down and I look at my collection view source, you can see I have a collection view source that's bound to groups. That's that name that's in my default view model. And then I have this D colon source. And the D colon stands for design. And it's a design time only property that I can set that will override my runtime property, but of course, only at design time. So what I do here is I'm binding to this all groups property. And then the source is I'm creating a design instance. So I'm actually going to create an instance of this type and run it. And that's why I also mark it as design time creatable, meaning, yes, I can create this at design time. It's safe to do. And then I can load that data. So instead of my sample data source, I really want my trip model. And I don't have an all groups property. You can see I've already lost it. Instead, I have this trips property. So I switch, and there we go. Now I have sample data showing up. All right. So next, we'll go do that on the group detail page. So continue working there. And again, I don't have sample data. Let's just fit all. So I'm going to just scroll down to that collection view source. And again, I'm going to update this. Now remember, this actually takes a specific trip. So first, I need to change to use the trip model. And then I'm going to bind to trips, and I'll just bind to the first one and the items collection. And you can see now that I have these items showing up from my sample data. This side still isn't. And that's because that's not bound to the collection view source. That's just bound to the grid. So on the grid, I have a data context set to the group again and a design time data context. So I'm going to update this one as well. Trip model. And let's just bind this to the first trip. And there we go. So now I have the title showing up, which means it's bound. But for some reason, this header is not showing up. So the easiest way I can go and try to figure out why is let's go in and look at the binding. So I have this group header. Here's my grid view. The grid view is this area. It's the header region and then all of these items. So when you scroll, the items just scroll through. And if I go into the header, first thing I see is a subtitle. Well, I don't have a subtitle, so I'm just going to delete that. And then I see binding this text to a description. So let's change that. Check data binding. And because I have designed a D colon data context set, I'm able to understand my schema. You'd also be able to understand the schema if you had bound the data context in XAML as well. It's only if you do it in code behind. So here, data context tells me it's a trip, and I can see that I have content. So let's bind to content, and now it shows up. All right. So now we're going to go on to, let's run it first. Make sure we have something showing up. All right, there we go. And if I click on the header, that's wired in now, and I get these items. And then I get my description. OK. So now that is done, there's one experience that I don't really like. And that's if I look at, I'll go back and run it one more time. On this landing page, I really want to be able to select a trip quickly and see the items. And this UX doesn't really work for me of having all these items. I mean, I have to scroll through all of these to see the different types of missions that I would be going on. So I'm just going to replace that. I don't think it's the right design for this application. So to do that, we have a bunch of item templates supplied. So I add a new item template, just add new item, and go to Windows Metro Style, and you see there are a bunch of pages. There's a group detail page that we had, the grouped items and the item detail, and all of these were in the grid app. There's also just a blank page if you want that, and a basic page. And all basic does is it has the back button and inherits from layout aware page, so you end up with that richness as opposed to a blank page, which is simply a page in the platform. We also have an items page, so I'm going to add that. So I'm going to call this my trips page, as it shows trips, and let it load. And so I have this page, and nothing shows up. So let's wire up some sample data first. First thing is this to-do. We redefine all of the resources, just in case you were adding this to a blank application didn't have that. Since I already have app name defined, I can just delete it, and now my app name will come through. That's being defined in app.xaml. And now we can add that design time binding. So I'm going to go and add another design time source here, and it's going to be a binding. And we're going to bind to the trips property because that's what I want to show. And the source, this is no different than before. I want to create an instance of, so now I need to add the namespace. So I'll go up and add it first to data. And XML, and it's using, there we go, there's IntelliSense, my data namespace. Now we can go finish this. So design time instance of my trip model, and I need to say that it is design time creatable. Great. And now they show up. So now I can see all my trips. This to me is a much better way of being able to select a trip rather than seeing all those items. So now that I have this, let's go behind and actually hook up the data as well. So again, there's this to-do comment that says I need to supply items. So I'm going to add the items to the default view model. And items in this case, again, is just all the items that I want to show because it's a page that's built to show items. In this case, my items are trips. I guess slightly confusing. I probably shouldn't have chosen items as my model as well, but I can get past that right now. So let's bind this to trip model, and I'm going to add the using statement. There we go. Trip model dot get trips. And that's it. So now it's hooked up both on design time as well as runtime. And now the next thing we need to do is simply navigate to this. So if I go to my app.xaml.cs, this is where the app is launched and that initial page is launched. So we'll spend a bit of time here now on launched. So there are multiple ways that your app can be activated. And in Windows, on launched is one way that your app can be activated. It can also be activated via charms, such as, you know, if I were to search and then type my app, or via, let's say, a secondary tile or some notification. On launched is what happens when you just tap that tile from the start screen. And then we have a bunch of code in here that handles this process lifecycle management again. First, we check to see if you're currently running, because you could try and relaunch it. So if you're currently running, we just want to activate the window and do nothing. But if you're not currently running, we're going to register this frame. And we have this Suspension Manager class. And that's what really handles all of this lifecycle management. It handles taking your state in, writing it out to a local storage, and then reading it back in. So if you were terminated before, then we need to restore that state. So we can just say suspensionmanager.restore. It will go grab all that data from the local storage and bring it back to life. Afterwards, we need to make sure we have a frame because we want to navigate within a frame. That's the standard pattern of navigation. And then we just navigate to whatever page. Here, we used to go to grouped items page. Instead, I want to go to trips page. So I just need to change that and hit F5. Wait for the app to come up. And as soon as it comes up, you can see that now I'm going to that page by default. Of course, all that's bound right now is selection. So I'm selecting items. I don't really want to select items. When I click it, I actually want to go somewhere. So we'll go wire that up, kill the application, and go back to the trips page. And the first thing you see is this selection. I mean, it's nice, but there's really no point in having a selection because I just want to click on it. So I'll select this, and I'm going to change the selection mode instead of single to none. And now I don't have that border and checkbox. And now I want to add a click event. So I'm going to just, first thing I need to do in Metro apps is there's a property, is item click enabled. Because you can do swipe gestures and everything else, by default that's turned off unless you're going to wire up a click event. Because you might do something based on selection or cross selection. So I'm going to turn that on. So now item click is enabled. And I'll go over to the events tab here, find my item click event, and let's just hook it up to an event called item click. So now I have an event, and in this event handler, I'm just going to navigate to another page. So we did before, this.frame.navigate, and we want to navigate to type of that group detail page is what I want to show. You just click the trip, now I want to show you details. So I'm going to go to the group detail page, and now I need to pass a parameter. So the parameter needs to be of the item I just clicked. So I know that the item is a trip, so I'm going to here we go. So the item clicked args has the clicked item, which I know is a trip. And then I need to pass the unique ID in. And that's it. So now I can run it again, make sure that everything's working. Now I can click a page and go to that details. All right. Now, there's one other thing that I'm just going to fix up now. You're noticing at least, at design time and runtime, we're not seeing any images. At design time, I want to see these. So I'm just going to go and add a design time image. And I have my model look for a design time image. So I'm going to add two design time images and throw them in. And I need to just rebuild since I added them, and I'm going to close and reopen the view because I want it to reload that sample data. Oops. And it's not loading. We'll return to that later. I'll keep going for now. All right. So now that we have that up, there's one other thing that I want to do. That original items page, you can scroll through items, but now I really want to add some sort of concept of editing data, updating data, sort of those CRUD operations of creating, updating, renaming. So I want to master, basically a way of looking at all my items and making modifications to it. So let's add a page for that. So I'm going to go and let's add one more page, add new item. We'll add a split page this time. So a split page really gives you that master detail relationship of you have all your items on the left, and when you touch them on the right-hand side, it will just update to show you the details of that item. So I'm going to add this, and I'm going to call it a manage items page, because that's what I want to manage, and let it load. And again, I get this wonderful design surface that's just all black and shows me I have controls, but no sample data, which makes it really hard to work with. So first thing I'm going to do is fix that. Let's do what we did before, and I'll do it quickly, is just wire in some sample data. So I'm going to add this dsource property. It's going to be binding. In this case, I want to show items. So let's just bind to the items property and the source. Oops. Have to add the using again. XMLNS. Let's call it data. And there it is. Using data. Source equals. And I want to create an instance of it to use at design time. And the type is my trip model again. And is design time creatable? True. Now I have items. Easy enough. Now, I also have this title property. And if I look at it, the title is bound to group.title. And this page is really set up so that if you want to show the details of a group, you can. So if I were to select a group, then I could go to this view and show for a particular group all the items. In my case, I really want to show all of them. I don't want to do it per group. So I'm just going to remove that data binding. So I'll reset it, and then I'll just type in a title. I want to see these are all my items. Great. Now you can still see this detail area over here is not filling out. So we can go take a look, and we have this item detail scroll viewer. And here, if we take a look, it's data bound to the selected item. And that works at runtime. The problem is, of course, at design time, we don't have a selected item of that control. So again, I'm going to just specify some sample data here. And it's the exact same way, is that I'm going to data bind to, in this case, items. And let's pick a particular item. So how about the second one, items one, where the source is, again, a ddesign instance of data trip model. And it is creatable. And one thing that needs to be creatable is you have to have a constructor that takes no parameters. So if you ever run into a problem without being able to see data, that might be one of the reasons. So you can see some of it started to load. Like I'm seeing compass now, which is my second item. There's compass. Again, I have this subtitle box, which I don't need, so we'll delete that. And it's warning me that I had some animations that use that. But since it's gone, it's also removed those animations for me. And I have this text box. Again, no data is showing up, so let's check the data binding. And sure enough, it's bound to content, which doesn't exist because description is what I chose to use. So I'm going to change that. And now I get the description, which is great. All right, so now I have sample data wired in. But with sample data, that won't work at runtime. So let's hook up some runtime data. So this is the manage trips page. So this is actually somewhat of a complex page. And the reason is because it shows you both these details and this the details view and the master list view. But depending on what orientation you're in, we actually do some different tricks so that it all fits nicely on the screen. So I'll show you that as soon as we get it wired in and run it. First, I'm just going to hook in some data. So it tells me I need group, but I decided I'm going to show all. So I don't actually need to bind to group. So let's get rid of that. but I do need to bind the items. So again, I just add my default view model, and I'm going to bind to items. And in this case, it's just all my items. So trip model, let's add the using. We can resolve that. Trip model dot get items. And that's all I need to do. I'll remove this to-do as well. And there's one more to-do. So now you're starting to see I'm using page state. So in my load state, the navigation parameter is what comes in from navigation. Just navigate to a page. That's what tells me like what item I'd want to show or what group. The page state is what comes in from your process lifecycle management. If your page got torn down by Windows and then you just got resumed, your app got resumed, then you have this page state that, again, is just a dictionary of I can put stuff in it. And it will just write it out and read it back in. So one of the things that I want to write out on this page is that selected item. So if you terminate your app and come back, the right item is actually selected. So I now have this selected item, and I'm checking to see, okay, if I'm coming back with some page state, and then I'm in this else block, and I have this selected item, then let's actually bind the selected item. So I can just do this by saying this dot, and I'm just going to bind for now, to the actual items view source dot view. And on the view, I can just say move current to, and now I need to supply an item. Since passing in the selected item is just the unique ID, because I don't want to store the entire object every time, I just want to store an ID, I'll use trip model, and I'll get the item that is in page state. Oops. Page state and selected item. And that's going to return a string, so let me cast that. There we go. Oops, am I missing? Ah, thanks. There we go. Okay. Nope, still missing something. Another parenthesis. Okay, great. Get rid of that to-do. Okay, so now I have this page. Let's wire up this page. So to do this, I really don't want to see this all the time. I mean, this is a management scenario. It's not like the frontline scenario that I'm using my app for. So one of the best ways to do that is to use an app bar and use that commanding practice of you swipe up from the bottom to get an application bar, and that has some of these advanced commands that don't need to be right on the design surface. So I'm going to go, and I want to just add that to my main page, which is a trips page now. So I'm going to open this in Blend, and we'll move to Blend to add the app bar. And when I say open in Blend, it will open the entire solution and then open that particular view that I had invoked this command on. So, oops. See, I made a mistake somewhere. Let's see let's go back to Visual Studio. I'll check the error list. No. It's build. Build succeeded. All right. One more try? No. Okay, this is odd. Oops. Didn't mean to click there. Results. So there's something wrong with this binding. All on the trip page. Huh. I'm not sure right now. I'm going to remove this for now just to see if I can get the page to load. Nope. Wow. Something went really wrong. Okay. Relative source. Where did I put it? All right. Well, that's why I have these starter projects. So let's go back to there. And I have... Where? Right here? I don't see it, unless I did something wrong in this line. Nope. Okay. Well, we'll just keep going with, there we go. And I am at, we'll just skip to this. Oops, there's my sample data. Okay. So let's go back to the trips page, and I'll open that in Blend. That's not going to work either. There we go. Excellent. Oh, now the sample images are loading too. Okay. I'll pretend that was working before. Yeah. So now the one thing that I already did was add the app bar. So let's delete it and I'll do it again. Okay. So I'm going to search for an app bar and go to add that. So I have this app bar here. And each page has two properties, a top app bar and a bottom app bar. So I'm going to drag this right into the bottom app bar. And you can see that it showed up on the design surface. And we give you some content in there. And the Windows guidelines say that all commands should be both bound to the left and the right, and there are two groups that move in from each edge. So I want to add an items, an items button that will invoke this page. And so I also put in all of these styles. So these are all in common styles in your template. There are ones for delete, edit, favorite, all of these different styles, because they're not built necessarily into the platform, we felt it best to put them here. And the reason is, I'll show you, I'm going to go and add, I like to use the more style, and I'm going to put it into the stack panel so it shows up here. And it gives you all the right design. So this is just a styled button. It's a button with a style applied and nothing else. So if I look at this, you can see the content is a glyph, and let's go to source to show you what we've done here. And this particular style for this more button, right here at the bottom of the screen, if you can see that, is this more app bar button style based on the app bar style. And then I've set three properties. I set the glyph, so you get the proper symbol showing up there. And then I set an automation ID and name. And this makes it accessible by default. And the reason I chose to use this automation properties.name is because both, this is what I bind to show that text. It's also what will happen if you use a screen reader. So by default, these app bar buttons will be accessible. So let's go back to the trips page. And I don't want it to say more. So I'm going to go and just override that. And I can override that by setting the automation properties.name. And let's set this to items. And you can see it's updated already to show items. Great. So now the next thing I need to do is hook this up so that it actually goes to that page. So to do that, again, I'm going to just go to the events. And I want to click event. When you click the button, something to happen. So I can just double click here, and it will create an event handler for me. And again, because I'm just doing something really simple, I can even stay in Blend. I mean, it doesn't have a great code editor, but I'm just going to basically copy this line and say navigate to a page. So let's copy that line, frame.navigate, and oh, I already had it. Well, there it is. Sorry. One step ahead of myself. Well, there's the event handler, button click one. Let's make sure it's hooked up on the other side, and I navigate to the manage items page. So let's go back and make sure that, let's change that back to button click one. Great, it took me there. So it's hooked up. Okay, and now we can run this. Oh, well, you're also seeing all this, the images show up now too. If I wanted to invoke, this is no different than I had before, minus the nice images. And I can go to items, click on the app bar button, and now I'm on this page. And this page, as we'd already fixed up the text, and I can scroll through and see all my items, click on different ones, see some text about it, and there we go. So now I have this manage items page actually wired in. Oops, let me kill that application. Go back. So now that I have this in, now's where let's get a little more interesting. Now I want to add some editing capability. So I'm going to add editing capability to this page, to the manage page. So let's open it up. And the first thing I'm going to decide is that when you select an item, you should be able to invoke a command. Again, we'll use the app bar. And edit this item, change view properties, either undo it or save it, depending if you want to commit or if you realize you made a mistake. And if you hit save, it should commit it right to the database, because I don't want to keep that local state around. And then on top of that, of course, if you're in the middle of editing and you accidentally close the application and you want to come back to it, we'll also save that state. Because again, you want to save off any UI state that's transient. You can just save using that load and save state functions that we had, like the selected item. So we'd want to save the editing item there. Because the other thing is, at any point, if your app is wiped from, if you have problems reloading it for some reason, that could be lost. So you really want to make sure that you're not storing important data in your local storage. Only like this UI state that if it's lost, it's not really a big deal. I mean, you lose the item that you were editing, but that's it. So let's start. So the first thing I want to do is I'm going to go and I have this item detail, this grid here, and I'm going to duplicate it. So I have one for editing and one for reading. So I'm going to group this because it is in a stack in a scroll viewer. You can only have one piece of content. So I'm going to group this into another grid. And now I'm going to take this entire grid and just copy it. So by holding the control key, I can just copy the grid. And oops, let me undo that. What I meant to do is copy it as a sibling. There we go. It says copy to grid. Great. So now I have two of them. So this one I'm going to rename as my editing grid. So now I have an editing and my reading grid. And Blend also gives you the ability to hide and show these. So rather than just have them both overlaid, I can turn one off or both off, so I can only work on the one I want right now. So let's work on the editing one. So the editing page, I have these two text blocks. Text blocks don't allow editing. What we need to do is add a text box. So I'm going to go ahead and add a text box. And I'm going to resize this just so that it fills the screen nicely. And now I want it to replace that text block, so let's just delete that text block. And now I have this text box there. Now I need to data bind it. So I can just go to the text property, and let's data bind. And because, again, I have the design time instance, I get my schema here, which makes it really easy to just select title. Let's make sure it's two ways. And now you can see IceAxe is showing up again. Now I need to go here, and I want to be able to edit that text as well. So I'm going to go and put in a text box here. Just draw it. Now let's take this guy. Oops. And we'll make it fit this cell. Oops, didn't want to rotate. There we go. Put a bit of a margin on it. And now we need to bind this to the description. Great. And now I can go ahead and delete this other text block. I don't need that. So now I have an area where I can at least edit the title and the description. If I wanted to edit this image as well, I might do something like put a button on it so you can tap it. So let's do that. And I'm just going to, I'll go to XAML for this because I just want to wrap this in a button. So the easiest way, I'll take these properties off. I'll put a button here. And then close the button. So now the image is just in there. And this just gives me the nice, you know, click event that I would expect to have. You could have also bound that up to an image or done something else, but this works. So now I can edit this text, or just click there to edit it, which is great. Now you need a way of actually showing these and making sure that the proper one is shown depending on what state you're in. So we're going to add some visual states for this. So the first thing you notice is that there's already this application view states group. And as I mentioned before, this application view state group is a state group that handles all of these different orientations. So we have a device panel that will simulate that. So if I go to landscape, I can switch to filled and see it react. You can see that the item templates actually changed. Here they have this text below it, and here they don't because there isn't room for it. I can also simulate snapped, and when I go into snapped, you can see I don't have enough space for both the master and the detail view. So I'm in the snap view. I can look down. I also have a snap detail view and see what it looks like there. So, and then, of course, there's also landscape as well. So, or portrait, sorry. So we'll go back to landscape. And I want to add another group because my editing state, whether you're editing or not, shouldn't matter what view state you're in. So I'll add a second group, and we'll call this editing states. Great. Now I need what I'll call a read-only state, and then I need my editing state. So now, one thing that Windows has built in is a bunch of transition animations that you can use. So when I select this read-only state, I can select the storyboard here, and I have these theme animations. These are built in to the platform. So what I want is when I'm in this read-only state, I can add a fade-in theme animation, and I want to fade in. It's read-only, so I want to fade in. Ah, there's my original grid. And I want to make sure that I fade out the editing one. And now you don't see anything because I need to go to the editing. And when I'm in this state, I want to make sure that I fade in the editing grid. And I'm going to fade out the read-only grid. There we go. And now you can see this. Oops, did I can turn on transition previews. You see that one load, and that means I selected the wrong one. So I'll add it again. I need to fade in that one. Oh, because I have the visibility set to hidden, it's not showing up. There we go. So now you can see, it's pretty quick right now, but you can see that transition happening on the design surface, and it will look better, you know, natively on the device. And that's all I had to do. So now that I have these two states, now I need to actually be able to invoke these states. So let's add an app bar again. I'm going to go back to the base state. Let's drag out this app bar. I'm going to add it to the bottom. And now I'm going to add a few commands. So the first command I need to do is edit. So if I want to start editing, I'm going to put that in the stack panel, put it in on the right. And then I'm going to want to also, when I edit, I might want to, in the save, when I'm editing. So I'll add that. And then I might want to cancel. And for cancel, I'm just going to use the undo and put it there. OK, so now I have these three app bar buttons. And I don't want to have them all visible all the time. It doesn't really make sense. You should have the edit one visible. When I'm read only, I should make sure that the save and undo buttons do not show up. So if you notice, I'm in recording mode, which means when I make this change, it's only going to apply to this particular state that I'm in. And when I switch to editing, now when I'm editing, I don't want to see the edit button because now you need to save or cancel. So I'm going to collapse that, and this only applies. So now as I transition between the two, you can see that the app bar buttons change. So now I have this all set up, and I need to wire up two things. One, I need to actually wire up all the logic behind these visual changes I've made. And then I need to invoke things off of the app bar buttons. So now that this is done, I'm going to switch and decide that I'm now keeping a lot of state. I'm keeping the editing trip, like the current instance of that. I'm keeping the currently selected trip. I have all of my trips. And I'm also wanting to keep the state of, am I editing or not? So I'm going to go back to Visual Studio. Is this the right one? Take a look quickly. See if it has the... Yes, this has the app bar and everything. Great. So I have two choices here. One is I can sort of use this implementation I already have. Remember, I just have this, you know, default view model that's provided, but it's not strongly typed. And I really want something more. And I need to put some logic into this view model. So I'm going to now pull the view model out and actually use a true view model and reduce the code and the code behind to only the things that happen on Navigate. And this is more of the MVVM pattern. We did not want to build this into the templates by default because it's a bit more code that you don't necessarily need to do, and we didn't want to force that upon people. But if you believe in the MVVM pattern, then you can easily extend this easily extend the templates to follow whatever MVVM pattern that you particularly like. If it's view first or model first, and I'm going to just go ahead and create a view model, and then we'll move all the state into that view model. So let's go add. We'll add a class. This class is going to be my manage items view model. Now let's go ahead, and the first thing I need to do here is, we'll go back and see what I wanted to touch on first. We'll start here, and I'm going to add a few fields. So the fields that I care about in this view model are my selected item. Let's resolve some of these types. Great. I care about my selected item. I care about my items collection. And I want to know if I'm editing or not. And if I'm editing, give me that local copy of that thing so that it's separate from the database. So those are my fields. And now I'll create some properties. But before I do that, usually you might use some sort of view model base that you've created, or you're using an existing MVVM platform or framework, that you like. Here, we have one that's built in, so I'm going to use this bindable base, and this is what we have in the common folder that's created with all of these apps. And bindable base is nothing more than a class that implements iNotify property changed. It's pretty simple. It has some really cool features in it for manage that I like. It takes advantage of this new 4.5 feature called caller member name, so that you don't actually have to pass in. If you've ever done on Notify property change, you have to pass in a string that represents that property, which is always a pain because you have to make sure that it matches and if it's spelled wrong. Now you can just put caller member name, and if you don't pass this optional parameter, it'll fill it in with whichever with whatever called it, which is great. So let's add this, finish this code snippet that I have. And you can see this is all I have to write. So for selected item, I have a getter and setter. I just set the property, and I just reference the field and then pass in the value. That's it. So nice and clean. All right, so now I have the properties, and of course I need a constructor. So I'm going to add a constructor. And what I'm doing here is, I want some design time data showing up. And because it's a view model that's bound separately, I want to be able to say, you know, a D design instance of this view model and have some data load. So I have this property here that I can use. It says, if I'm in design mode. So Windows application model, design mode, design mode enabled. So if I'm in design mode, I need to get all the items from the trip model. I'm going to say I'm not in the editing context and get a selected and edit item. This way I can see something on design surface when I wire it up. It's also really important if you do things in your view model, like let's say connect to a database or do some sort of action that you wouldn't have at design time. So let's pretend it connects to a web service that might not be running. That will bring down the designer because we're actually executing your code. So you should always wrap those types of things in these checks so that you do the reverse. If I'm not in design mode, then go ahead and actually set up all my state. Okay, so now we're here. I have this pretty simple view model. Let's go and rip out everything from the code behind. So I'm going to go to the code behind of this page, and if you're an MVVM purist at all, you'd say that there should be no code here. I'd argue that you should only have code here that reflects reflects, let's say, actions that need to be taken on the view. This is navigate and like these loading and saving states. But loading and saving states, all that is repopulating your view model or saving your view model off. I shouldn't really be doing any manipulation there. That's it. So that's what we're going to do. So first I'll add a property, and my property is going to be my view model. Manage items view model, and I'll call it view model. So I have that. And then I need to set it up. So view model equals new view model, and then I'm going to bind it. So just the data context to the view model. Great. Now I have it hooked up. Now what I need to do is actually put some state in there. So when I load state and I get these items, I don't want to use this default view model anymore. I actually want to use my view model. So we can grab that new view model dot items, set that equal to this. And again, it needs an observable collection. So let's create an observable collection of items. We'll wrap that because get items returns an IEnumerable. So I'm just going to create observable collection. Now I have this complicated stuff, and this actually touches elements on my UI. This goes to the item's view source and calls and makes it do something. I really don't like that because now all of a sudden this separation between view model and view is really starting to not be clear. So I'm going to get rid of that and instead just use the view model to keep track of the selected item. So selected item equals, in this case, I've just launched a page for the first time. I don't have any item, but I really want to show something. I mean, it would look pretty bad if I just had nothing selected and the right-hand side of the screen was just empty. So I'm going to set it to the view model.items, and we'll just do the first one. Great. Now, if I do come back with some state, I need to populate that. So let's populate that as well. So what I need to do here is, first, I'm just going to get the item ID is what comes back from page state. So let's just store that off so I can work with it. There we go. And then I need to get the item because I might not have the item. But, well, I do actually because I have this items collection, so I just need to find it there. So I'm just going to write a quick little thing that says viewModel.items. I'll just take the first one. I'm going to assume it's there. You could defend against this later, such that I have some sort of item. And I want to make sure that the unique ID of the item matches the item ID that I had stored off, item ID. Great. And so I can get that guy, and that is my selected item now, which tells me is of type item, as I expect. And again, I don't need to touch my collection view source. That's purely in my view. I just need to set the state of my view model because that's all I'm doing in load state. So this items, dot selected item equals selected item. Don't really need that line, but there. So that's clear. Great. So now that I have that, let's go fix the XAML. Okay, so the XAML all still looks the same, and that's because of my design time bindings. But again, I don't want to bind to the old, I'm binding to a new view model now, not to my old default view model. So the first thing I need to do is remove this binding. So here we originally bound for you to that default view model. Since I'm binding code behind, I can just remove that. And then I can go down into the collection view source and update it. So I'm binding to items. Well, that still exists in my view model, so that's good. But this is all wrong. So instead, I'm not binding to trip model. Let me go add a using statement first because I am, I have it. It's in this local right there. So I need to replace the trip model with my view model. So this is just manage items view model. Done. I haven't built since I added that. So I'll build. So that's a known issue, but I'll build first. That's why I made this public. We don't need to make our view model public. So let's make it private instead. Great. Now I can go back to, here's the XAML. Go back to where we were, and let's replace that with my type. So just local. Manage items view model. Great. And nothing's changed. I mean, that's what you'd expect because I'm just loading in the items when I have design time data. So let's go update a few other things. Just while we're at it, we have this other binding which we had put in to bound to an item for the right-hand side. Now, I don't really want this set here on the scroll viewer because I have different bindings. I have selected item if I'm doing reading. And if I have this editing, if I'm in editing mode, I need to bind to the actual item that I'm editing. So I'm going to just rip this out for now. And now, let's focus first on the rating case. On the reading case. There we go. So we'll go in, and I'm just going to, to this guy. And I'm going to just set the binding on him, because that's the one that I care about. So this is my reading case, in which case I really am bound to the selected item, and I'll put some sample data in so I can see it. Fine. Now, what is a selected item? I'm storing the selected item on the view model side, but I haven't actually bound that up. So that's something that I need to do now. So on the list view, which is this view, I need to keep track of that select item. So let's just add a binding, and I can go in here and I can say selected. I don't have it there. Selected item, and I need to bind, so I can create a data binding. In this case, it's just the inherited data context, but I don't have one set because I'm doing it in code behind. So I can just type it in because I know what I want, which is selected item, since that's what I'm calling it in my view model. Make sure it's two ways so that it can be updated from the code behind, from the view model, or when I select a different item. And now that's bound. And you can see that it just added, there it is, selected item, binding for two-way. Okay, let's go back, and the one thing we need to do now is hook up this editing context. And the editing context is actually just bound to the editing item, the one that I'm currently editing. So I can just type that in, data context bound to the editing item, and then I could put sample data in there if I wanted, but for now that's great. Okay, so now all the bindings are correct and set up, and I have some app bar buttons that will do things. Right now, it won't do anything, but I have the buttons set up, and I have the view model set up. Now I need to hook it all together. So to hook it all together, the first thing that I'm going to do is add a bunch of callbacks. So when you touch a button, we can actually decide to enable states or not. There are a lot of ways to handle this. The problem that we have here is Visual State Manager needs to be called, and that needs a framework element to run on. And I don't want to move that into the view model completely. So the way that I'm going to handle this, and everyone sort of has their own way, is I'm going to just add a pointer back to the view. So I'm going to add just this view. I'm going to store it as a property here. And then I can call update states and call visualstatemanager.goToState. So I'm going to just do that. It's a little, breaks some of the purity, but I think it's the best way to handle this. And now I need to store the view. So I'm going to take a view in. And I decided to just go with my layout aware page. And this is just my view pointer. And I won't have it at design time. So here I'll put an else, and I'll put view is set to the view pointer, which is great. Now, again, because I'm doing sample data, I need to have a parameter list constructor, manage items view model. And I will just call the other one and pass in null. And that's fine because I guarded against that in my visual state call. Great. So now I have these constructors. Of course, that's going to complain now that I now need to pass the page in. So let's go here. And when I create this, now I have a pointer. So now the one thing that I need to do is actually wire this up because I have this update states, but I'm not calling it anywhere. So we'll go into properties. And let's update. There are, again, multiple ways to do this. I'm just going to put it in when I change the editing property. I'm going to put this here. Update states. Sure, I'll use transitions. Great. Done. Now there's one component left, and that's the commanding or button click events. I don't want to go with click events. I actually want to use commanding. And to do that, I'm just going to grab a framework. I don't want to have to implement routed command or anything of the sort. And there's some great frameworks that already do that. So I'm just going to go use them. So I'm going to use a NuGet package and just go out and find any of the packages that are online. And I like MVVM Lite. And MVVM Lite is set up by one of our MVPs. But it's just a public package that he allows anyone to use. And he has a preview out for Windows 8. So I can grab this. I want the libraries only. So I just install it. And if you haven't played with NuGet, it's a cool little way of just getting packages. And it just adds components directly to your project that you're working on. So you can see I've installed this package. If I go into references now, it's added these references. This, Galasoft is company.mvvmlite extras for Win 8. And it was able to do that based on the platform. So when I added it, it checked to see what am I compiling against. Is it Silverlight, WPF? And then it added the right references. So now that I have that, I can just go and add some commands. And I'm just going to use his implementation. So I'll add these to the bottom. So I have these commands. I'll add them. And they're just relay commands. Let's resolve it against this MVVM framework. And with a command takes in basically two different things, which I haven't written yet. An action, what should happen when I select it, and should it be enabled or not? So so this is the execute, and this is the can I execute. So I know like when I'm editing, I'm going to check to see if I can edit. But things like save only enable it if I'm in the editing context. If I'm not, then disable the button. So let's go and add those behind quickly. And I have these command methods here. So I have a can edit, which says you can only edit if you actually have something selected and you're not already editing. And then start editing, all I have to do is set it to true. And I have this little copy constructor so I can copy my editing thing locally. Stop editing. Just turn it to false. If I decide to save it, push it back to the database, and then get rid of the item. I don't need to have it around anymore. And because we don't have a command manager, I need to update all of these commands myself. So for update commands, again, any time that we change the editing state, I need to go check again for every command and say, are you still enabled or not? So I need to add that in myself. So now all that this is added in, there's one piece left, and that's just to hook up these commands. So I'm going to go to my Manage Items page, and I'm going to go to the app bar buttons. So I have this save button, editing button here, and I'll just do this quickly here. Let's just hook it up to the command. So command, and it's binding, because I've now exposed it on my view model, and this is bound to the save command. Okay. And this one, command, is binding, and this is bound to the cancel command. And the third one, command, binding, to the edit command. Great. That should be it. And let's run it, see what we have. So let's go back and we will just, invoke the app bar. I right-clicked, go to the items page. Well, you can see it's not quite right yet. We can figure out what's wrong. When I click edit, we go into the editing mode. Looks like I have them reversed. And then I can still undo. And now I've lost that. So clearly I reversed something. But the commands are going through, as you can see. The right buttons are showing up. The view states are correct. If I hadn't reversed it, then we would have had the right behavior. I'm sure I just bound to the wrong grid somewhere. Other than that, I'm going to just do one last thing before we end, and that's go back to this PLM, this process lifecycle management. I loaded the data, but I didn't talk about saving. And I want to do that because I've seen people run into this problems on the forums already. And so when I save data, what I need to save is any this transient UI state. So in this case, there are three things that I could save. I don't want to save the entire view model because I don't need to. I only need to save the selected item and the items that I'm currently editing. So all I have to do here is say this page state dictionary. I just need to add things to it. So I'm just going to add the editing item I want to keep track of, right? And I'm just going to set this to my view model dot editing item. This I need to save because it has a bunch of transient data in it. I could have added different image, different text, so I need to save that off. I also need to save off other things such as let's put in the selected item, for instance, because I want to keep that, and I actually use it above, and view model dot selected item. That's all I'm going to save for now. And we can run the application, and we'll simulate this really quick, and then, so there's one way to simulate this, which is really easy. I can go into items. Let's just select, let's say, the third one, and I can come back here, and I have this, this is the debug location toolbar, and it allows me to go to suspend and shut down. So this is going to pretend that I suspended it, Windows suspended it, and then the app was terminated, and I quickly ran into a serialization problem. I'm using data contract serialization in the back end. If you go into Suspension Manager, that's simply how we serialize things. It's a bit odd because you don't have to see that up front anywhere. It's buried and it just all works for you. But it requires you to know about the types. So a lot of people will hit this. If you just navigate to pages and you just put in complex objects, you'll run into this. And what's happening is we just don't know what the type is, so the contract serialization is failing. We've worked around this a little bit to just basically block against crashing your app. For the RTM release, but it's still something that you need to handle. And we've given an easy way of handling it, and when you work with your suspension manager, and I'll just put it right up here, so the suspension manager has a bunch of known types. So all I need to do is add any type that I'm trying to serialize. First, make sure it's serializable. Go into that type and maybe mark some fields that are not serializable and get all that set up. And then just add the type. So type of, I'm just trying to store an item. Let me add the using statement, resolve. And now we're there. And run it once. Show you that it's, because I crashed last time, I got rid of my database. So I can't load the database. But other than that, that's all you need to do to work around that problem. So I'm going to end there, of course, on a high note, but hopefully you get the idea and this was helpful. So thank you all.